A 250% surge in prices prompts the London Metal Exchange to suspend trading on nickel contracts. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Nickel is used in everyday objects like rechargeable batteries. It's also used to make stainless steel more resistant to corrosion. And today, the price of the commodity spiked to $100,000 a ton. That pushed the London Metal Exchange to halt trading for the rest of the day and possibly the next several days. It said the severe price swings are evidence the evolving war in Ukraine is having an effect on the market. Though the exchange didn't give additional information as to the reason for the stoppage, the Financial Times and others have suggested it could be a result of a short squeeze. That's a big player in the market betting the price of something, in this case nickel, will fall. But instead, when the price rises, that player is forced to buy more in order to stave off big losses. Dominic Schneider, head of commodities at UBS Wealth Management, explains the gravity then of the decision by the LME to halt trading today.
You can't just allow prices basically ballooning by 66% one day and 70% another day. And nickel, which historically is one of the most volatile base metals, we've never seen such kind of moves. So where people are worried is that what if we don't have the Russian supply, or we're simply not willing to touch some of these exports? And Russia is an important exporter of some of the metals, probably the world's largest primary aluminum exporter. When it comes to nickel, it's important, particularly in class one nickel, which is used for EV battery. That's the biggest worry at this point. I think it would be cautious to see this necessarily happening. Other more bigger metals, let's say copper and alloy, but I think more smaller ones, a similar situation could happen.
Should we brace for similar moves in other markets like what we've seen today from the LME?
Well, as I said, I think nickel is a smaller metal compared to, let's say, the vast energy market, etc. So it's a little bit of a different situation. But I think in general, we need to be a little bit more concerned or sensitive, and maybe a politician also sensitive of, you know, their actions have obviously consequences. And I think some of these markets do react quite strongly, particularly when inventories are low. And for example, in nickel, they were pretty low. I mean, we stood at 250,000 tons of inventory. Now we're at 75. I mean, some of these metal markets are depleted inventory at exchanges. Now you can argue these exchanges just are a small percentage of total inventory at hand, but I think it's a little bit tip of the iceberg. It's the only thing we see, and some of the other metals are not available. And if Russian supply stays absent, partially self-imposed, then I think we can see more violent spikes in other commodities and oil. So in our risk case, we're going to go above $150 per barrel, maybe towards $200.
Dominic Schneider, head of commodities at UBS Wealth Management. Thanks for your time this morning.
You're welcome.
Well, checking some of those other commodity numbers now, the global Brent crude oil benchmark is up 1.7% today to $125 a barrel. Gold is up 0.7%, staying above the psychologically significant $2,000 level. Meanwhile, global stock markets are mixed. Benchmarks across Asia followed Wall Street lower overnight, registering losses in the 1.3 to 2% range. Here in London, the FTSE 100 is slightly lower, but benchmarks in Paris, Frankfurt, and Madrid are up in the 0.9% to 2.6% range. Russia has warned it may close its main gas pipeline to Germany if the West moves forward with a ban on its oil. Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak said that would lead to a, quote, catastrophic consequence for the global market. He speculated prices would more than double to $300 a barrel. Remember, I said a moment ago, they're at $125 now. U.S. and European allies have been discussing a ban on Russian oil, and later today, the European Commission will present to Parliament its plans to end dependency on Russian oil and gas. From Brussels, the BBC's Jessica Parker outlines what we can expect.
So they're going to look at diversifying supplies away from Russia towards other countries such as America, Azerbaijan, Algeria. They're going to speed up their investment in renewables like solar, wind and hydrogen. And they're also going to, I think, keep focusing on this idea of trying to renovate buildings so they're more energy efficient as well. What I'm told is trying to cut European consumption of Russian gas by two-thirds by the end of this year.
Have you been hearing about whether this is really possible? It's one thing to have plans outlined. It's another to be able to deliver on those plans.
Well, and I think that's what we'll have to keep a very close eye on today. It's not just the what, but the how. The EU has been, we know, working quite hard to boost supplies from other countries. So there was one point where one of the commissioners here in Brussels was flying all around to different countries, to Qatar, to try and talk to people about finding new supplies. But it's interesting because I was speaking to a diplomat yesterday about all of these plans, and they were basically saying, we have no choice now but to try and do this because of the level of sanctions that the EU has imposed on Russia. Russia is no longer regarded as a reliable supplier. So EU leaders, the European Commission, they really feel they have no choice but to go down this road. But we'll have to really look at the details as to whether they can actually reach these goals, these aims.
And when it comes to green energy, that's obviously been a huge target that countries around the world have been trying to reach. But do you think the EU will have to consider, you know, restarting nuclear power stations instead as
or
sort of a
drawing on coal more as well?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, these are absolutely things being talked about. So France for a long time obviously has been a big advocate of nuclear, but certainly when you talk to people around here, this idea of tapping into industries that maybe sometimes countries were thinking they would leave behind or phasing out coal, those things aren't probably going to happen as quickly as originally been thought because they just need to find the energy somewhere. Because the other factor here as well is that something you hear from, for example, the Polish Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki recently talked about this and broader concerns about how if you're paying Russia for gas, for oil, for coal, that money, it's feared, is going into the Kremlin's coffers and helping finance this war in Ukraine. So it's a huge consideration in that sense as well.
The BBC's Jessica Parker for us in Brussels. Thanks for breaking this down.
Pleasure.
The United Nations now says more than 2 million people have fled Ukraine as fighting continues across the country. To try to help manage the financial and humanitarian crisis, the World Bank has approved a package of loans and grants for the country, as the BBC's Orlando Teal reports.
The World Bank announced it was releasing funds totaling $723 million to Ukraine, with immediate effect. The statement said the money would help Ukraine's government provide critical services, including wages for hospital workers, pensions for the elderly, and social programs for the vulnerable. The bank's president, David Malpass, said it was taking quick action to support Ukraine and its people in the face of violence and extreme disruption caused by the Russian invasion. A $3 billion funding package for Ukraine is being prepared in the coming months.
That's the BBC's Orlando Teal reporting there. And in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.